why we want the aging there is to show the different age groups of the women that are doing the Catholic.
Oh, yeah.
So what's your address here, Maxie?
R-1-Muncie.
Now, is it spelled S-E-E or C-E-Y?
C-E-Y.
What's postal code?
N-O-L-1-Y-O.
Your date of birth?
January 30th,
47. So you're turning 40 like I am this year.
I'm there already.
Your place of birth?
On reserve here. Oh. Muncie.
Put the microphone switch right in the middle. Flip it down right in the middle. Just so we're sure we catch your voice no matter if that's
your it. Band membership then would be what? Chippewa?
Chippewa the Thames, yeah.
Do you have a work number? Is this the same thing?
No, it's
28-264-9098. What type of art and craft do you do?
Leather. Some beadwork and some quilting. Usually, yeah.
Do you dance?
No.
Okay, you're on. That's it.
Ah, I thought you were. Why don't you go ahead and do it, and I'm going to take some pictures while she's talking and working, okay?
Let me.
Maxine Brandt Hendrick.
Well, Maxine, what type of crafts do you do? And what? And how did you get interested in it?
I do some beadwork. I do soft and hard leather. I don't really enjoy doing beadwork. I find it time consuming. And I got into beadwork through the church. We had a kids program where we taught the kids how to do basic stitching, edging, and those kind of things. And we had a little bit leather, so it kind of followed, and I can't remember how I got to work on leather work, but I do a lot of glove making.
Who taught you?
My friend Genevieve Muskukuma.
And
myself.
When did you learn this?
It's been 10 years ago this year.
What do you get out of doing this type of craft?
Well, with the beadwork, I've seen work that some of the kids that I worked with, they can do a lot, really nice beadwork, a lot better than, like, they went on from where I worked with them.
What, out of the work that you do, what type of work is most important to you in this type of craft? What do you get out of that?
Creating the different kind of gloves and,
This would be like working with leather or the hide leather.
Mm-hmm. I've made my daughter a dress. I'm going for a jingle dress now.
Are you really?
That's what she wants to do.
What does your family think and feel about the craft work that you do?
My son does the gloves with me in wintertime, especially if he's broke, because like they do, the money I've sold them, usually do about 10 pair winter. It all depends, you know, how. And he can sew the gloves in 3 hours, put the leather together, and then I do the interior part of it and decorate it up a bit.
Is there certain types of leather or hide that you use with your gloves or your moccasins?
Mostly moose hide.
Why is this?
They look nicer. And for the gloves, the fancy ones, I do moose hide because they stay together longer. But the deer hide, they don't get wet through. And like for kids' gloves, that's really important. I remember I told my son that, and he didn't believe me. He was outside with his gloves in the water. I get a fair amount of sales for like the things, and I have quite a bit of people asking for different things.
For a pair of gloves, how much would you charge?
For just basic gloves, nothing other than gloves. For kids, they're around $20. We get on, the adults are 35, and then when we get into the one with the gauntlet on, they run around 50, and then if I can get someone to do beadwork on them, it's $75, somewhere in there.
Do you have any other questions? What does the non-native community think and feel about your craft work?
I get a fair amount of sales from them too, like the ones around Mumbridge's, and I've sold, like different families, when they see them, they usually order them. I had an order for 4 of them last year from one family. And then there's other people just interesting.
When you were growing up, did you come from a family that done this type of work? Or?
Nope.
So you're basically the only one out of the family that taught yourself how to do this?
Well, yeah, there's other ones in our family that do them now, but like we didn't do it.
Why do you think that was?
My mother died when I was small, mm-hmm. And my grandmother raised all of us. There was about 22 in and out of our family. We lived in a log house down the road here, and basically, she was just busy trying to keep food on the table for us. Like, we had gardens, we had cows and pigs and everything, but we didn't really have time for much else.
So what made you really interested in this type of work? Like, there must have been something inside of you to want to do this type of work.
I don't know. Basically, I believe that I don't know. You've got to have some pride in yourself and know a little bit about yourself and your being, what being Indian is. And my girlfriend, when she came back home, she was involved. Like, she knew a lot of things, and she got me interested, and I stuck with it, and I was involved.
How long, when you start to do pyramids, would you have to have a pattern set down?
Yeah.
Or like, could you tell me about the steps that you go through to begin your next end to the ending of it?
Just stretching the leather, and then basically finding where the best part for the cover, like the top of your gloves and the type of gloves you want, and then using the, like, usually try and go from, like everybody says, your hands are either a 7-8, but a lot of people's, they're shaped different, and then usually try and get a pattern of length of their fingers, because I've come across different, you know, gloves where they say, well, I wear an 8, and you get the 8 and the thumb's too short, or I usually try and go through a person's hand pattern and then kind of follow the steps of the patterns that I've come across.
When you're stretching your hide, how do you know which way to use it for stretching? Like when you're cutting your material out. Some people, when they're doing vests, they have to stretch it.
Mm-hmm.
And if they stretch a certain way, then that's the way that the vest is going to go. If you turn it the opposite way, it's going to go stretch this way. But if you turn it up, you know, like this, then there's not going to be that much play in your work. How do you know?
With the hides, you have to stretch them every way, though. And then, there's not a lot of stretch in the deer hide, but you still have to stretch them because after they're, if you don't stretch them, you never know which way, as you work with them, they become softer and then they start going out of the shape that they were. So they're stretched every way, like you're pulling on each corners.
And with me, I was told different.
Well,
I was told that when you, if you're doing a vest, and if you stretch it this way, then you cut your vest from bottom to top or top to bottom. But you don't cut it from side to side because you're stretching it and you're doing a different stretch.
Mm-hmm.
Like if the stretch was this way, you have to be careful because then when you went to cut it, it would stretch on you more. It would be more for a bigger person by the time you got finished. But you didn't stretch it all, you know, like you didn't stretch it all over the place.
Well, I learned the stretching method from the people in Thunder Bay, though.
Is that right?
From there.
You got some, did you?
Yep, but I'll keep yours here.
Geez, I gotta be in there with that winter stuff I had packed away, and I went and looked again, they were in there. They just didn't look good enough, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I was here once already.
Oh. I was gathering, trying to find people home.
What time is it? 2:25?
I'll bring them back over. Okay, thanks, Ev.
How has the crafts changed since you began doing the craft work? Have you ever seen other people's crafts? And if you would see the difference in as you go along with your craft work?
There seem to be more trendy now, like you used to have, like just your basics, your your designs within, and then now you see the, like a lot of work in the Thunderbolt pattern, and then I remember everyone used to just use, you never ever used a red and an orange hardly together,
yeah.
And I've seen that like coming through with these kind of colors. And I found that working with kids, they put some of the weirdest colors together and they came out so looking so nice. I had tried to find some of the work that the kids did. And it was unbelievable with some of them colors.
Ask Betsy why I know.
She did a bracelet for my daughter for her birthday. And the colors that she wanted together were red, green, and sort of yellowy gold. took her forever, and she finally gave it to her mother to finish. She says, because I can't stand working with those three colors together.
It just, do you ever find colors like that?
Just
that
certain colors
you
she doesn't
want to
do
can't
them.
Use or?
Not really. I've just, like, I've gotten so I don't look like this one. I thought it looked like an old cigar.
It's actually earth colors you've got.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, so like, you know, I try to use the sky colors or the earth colors. What do you use in your work? What type of colors do you use? Do you know the meaning of the colors and do you put it together? Like
sometimes, yeah, I know the meaning of the colors and. But it just depends on my mood, or if I know that person's taste in colors, then I go with, you know, if they like the blues, and I go through with the blues.
With the materials that you use, is there certain designs or symbols that you put into your work, and the colors you use?
Sometimes, but then like a lot, I don't do a lot of beadwork. Mine are, I dreamt about that peace pipe before I did that. Because I never figured I could even draw or do anything like that. And then, I don't know, I've found though that a lot of times when there's things that I dream about and then I can work from them. And I used to laugh at people that did that, or that said that.
My mom did that too. As a matter of fact, she just did that a couple of weeks ago.
Well, haven't we heard several people
yeah.
speak of having used their dreams?
Yeah, well, it's the same as mine. Like, if you see pictures that are hanging on the wall that I've done, like,
mm-hmm.
I draw pictures and then I just put them on the wall. And what I do is, if I have a dream at night and I'll try to remember my dream, I usually get up and write it down, go back to sleep and try to bring it back to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll put it up and then try to, if I'm trying to explain what this dream means to someone else, I can't, but I know inside what it means. And it's very, very hard for me to explain it.
Yeah.
Do you recall any traditional stories that speak of Native women's work, like the beadwork that they do, or the myths, or the reasons for the moccasins?
Some, yeah. I can't really remember. If someone were to mention, you know, some of them, I can remember someone telling me them, but to try and tell them right off.
Okay. We'll go for that.
I know another place I didn't tell you. I learned some of my beadwork from a lady from Six Nations at teacher's assistant course. I have beautiful little dirty moccasins. I thought they'd be the easiest things to do when I started. You know, them tiny ones like these.
Oh, yeah.
And white with the beads on the front. And they took me forever. Practically the whole
time. The bigger ones.
Yeah.
I know. I've tried them too.
But when, like, I thought all the other things were just dinky little things. And her name was, she's Shin's mother from Six Nations.
Do you remember any crafts being done a long time ago, like when you were young, and that are not being done today?
Sweetgrass baskets and those things. We had an old lady who lives just
the reason
around
why
the corner.
We look back and forth is because we had just did an interview with a young girl. And she taught herself how to do it. She didn't know absolutely nothing about sweetgrass, except that her grandmother had shown her a patch, and that was it. And she had always, as she grew up, she sort of left it behind, but she's coming back to it now. And she had turned around and said, hey, I want to learn how to do the sweetgrass baskets. And she went out and she cut the sweetgrass, and she cleaned it, and she started making her basket. She tried it just freshly out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't know that she was supposed to dry it, and then she found out she had to dry it. So she started using a has to dry it faster.
Not with the wax.
But anyway, it was like she taught herself. That's how bad that some people have it inside of them so much that they'll go and they'll find any way possible to get to learn the craft work. Why do you think that the sweet glass basket's not being done today?
I don't know, people just aren't sharing the things that they did. Like when we had that Mount Elgin school here, and I think this was the reserve that lost the most for having that school here. And like everything was wrong, you weren't supposed to do any of those things. And you know Mary, she knows how to do them. And each year she's going to teach, but she never ever does.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk more about the effect of the Mount Elgin School and what you feel that did to the community and to Native values? And
I like.
What have you heard? What do people in the community say about the school and what was lost because of it?
Well, in our family, none of my uncles or aunts went there. We've had people marry into our family who have, and they talk about they couldn't talk their language. They couldn't talk about anything that was Indian, and like our whole heritage seems like it just died out. Every other reserve, there's a lot of people who know different things, but then they didn't have Mount Elgin on the reserve either. And people, even our elders, they seem like, well, nobody will believe us anyhow. We had a situation about a dump. We're in the back settlement area of the reserve, and they wanted to move the dump site to just around the corner from me, down and around. And I had been sitting in on a band membership meeting with my girlfriend's dad, and he's real old Indian. He believes, you know, there's certain things you do and you don't. And he was telling me, you know, he says, if you put that on there, he says, our reserve's bad enough now. He says, it's going to be even worse if you put that on there. He says, the water table runs to the river, he says, and that's going to pollute the whole reserve. And I said, well, why don't you tell them that? Why don't you get up and say that? He says, they won't listen to me. He says, nobody listens to old people. He said, they just don't. And he told me, he says, like, he lives over from Melbourne, and there used to be a dump site on the corner, on the curve, S curves. And he said, you come by in the wintertime, he says, and you can still see the steam from that. They covered it, but it's, you know, it's still there. And so I got up and I said what he told me. And they, like our modern day counselor says, oh, that's a lot of bull. That's not true. He says, it's clay back where you live, and it won't bother nothing. And I said, well, the water, I'd known a little bit. And I said, well, the water table goes to the river, doesn't it? I says, it comes through. And it might not be tomorrow, but I says, in the future, it will gradually do that. And they said, no, that's not right. And we ended up, we didn't have the dump back here. We're into a park now. But I felt really good, because like in London now, where they're having that one about the dump sites, all the different things that are happening, that I'm glad that there were some people who agreed with us and the dump site isn't on the reserve. We have enough problems without having